This podcast is a member of the Place to Be Nation family. Visit us at placetobenation.com, the only place to be in your pop culture world.
Come on, everybody. Come on. We call it the place to be.
Yes, it's the place to be.
Then I shall be.
It is contagious. It is the place to be, and we are live each and every Monday.
Do you actually need a camera for Tout, or is it like part of the program?
Yeah, I like Big Dick myself.
I'm just kidding. The man you see and
the place to be. Do you listen at all when I speak on the show?
I'm not the one who thrives on whining about carriages that are 3 inches from my fucking car.
So if it's too much for you and your big cock of the walk Knights of Columbus fat cat,
when does it end,
to bring
JR?
The carriage
when
back to the fucking thing, then what do you want? What do you want?
When does it
you're
end?
Making the poor guy making minimum wage while you're sitting there with our mento going through the coffers. Party people in the place to be.
5 years. 5 years we've been doing podcasts. And we have this. This is trash.
It's not Austin in L.A. It's not Cabana in Chicago. It's not Conrad down in Alabama. Place to Be Nation presents Scott Criscolo and JT Rosero. This is the Place to Be podcast.
To do worse than Josh Richards. He'll come around when the chimes ring out. It's Christmas morn again. Peace on earth will come to all.
Place to Be Nation, welcome to the great episode of the one and only Place to Be podcast. I'm your host, Just Rosero, coming to you live here on this Monday evening back inside the PTBN studios. And joining me, as always, my PIC, Mr. Scotland Criscolo. Scott, how are you?
Good evening, JR. Good evening, Place to Be Nation. Welcome to episode 506 of the longest running episodic motherfucking gold standard. And you were memorialized. Well, not you specifically, but your career at your past company today. I've been waiting to tell you this all day today.
Oh, yeah?
So, yeah. So, obviously, as you remember, and I'll let everyone know, obviously, most companies, decorates for the holidays. And you remember mm-hmm. we do stuff too. So, we cover all bases at my company. So, in our lobby, we have a Christmas tree. We're actually going to trim it later in the week. They get pizza and we make a little party out of it, lunch thing out of it.
Little man.
So, a tree. What's that? Yeah. a menorah. Mm-hmm. I'm not going to pretend to know what the hell it's called, but whatever the Kwanzaa candle holder thing is, I'm not going to pretend to know what the name of it is, but the candle holder for Kwanzaa. And this year, JR, and I'm not fucking with you at all, the HR person who's new, she's only been here a couple months, added a Festivus pole.
Very nice.
There's an actual Festivus pole. In the lobby.
I like it.
Isn't that crazy?
I like it. You could argue that's for Hanukkah, too, since it originated with the Costanzas.
Oh, actually, that's true. Yeah.
That's true. All right. Well, I'm glad to hear it. That's great. It's a progressive company. We've come a long way since I was there trying to bust up the union. Good times. Actually, that was the best Christmas party we ever had there when they were trying to get the union in and the corporate was trying to win us over. That was a good time. All kinds of gift cards. We haven't talked yet since you've been here. We had a good dad visit. We had
yes,
our usual day after Thanksgiving party. We had we went to a Providence game, mm-hmm. some boneheads.
Yep.
So that slug Armento.
Yeah, can't believe he now knows where it is.
And those Iona Ghouls went down, and we saw we played football, and that went well. Mm-hmm. I thought you turned the clock back a bit. I must say I think the wet track and the short passing game really opened it up for you again. You didn't have to rely on the deep ball.
No, I felt really good. I think the slogging actually benefits the slower guys because the faster guys can't. You know, guys like the Cowboy and them, it's tough to get traction. So
you're running that West Coast offense. Bill Walsh would have been proud. Yeah.
That's right. Yes, he would have. Good day though. Good day. Good to see all the guys again. Mm-hmm. Always good to see him once a year. Maybe a rumor to. Because we're not sure about next year, obviously. So maybe a spring game, maybe.
We'll see.
Your pal there loves it. How much did you hear about it in the last week?
No, we'll have to do another, maybe a different fall weekend next year. We'll figure it out. We'll get time.
Yeah.
Right around the time we get to 600, a couple of years. So.
Exactly. Yes.
All right. Of course, we are closing in on Christmas. We got a couple episodes left here in the year, mm-hmm. a couple vaults, and then our Christmas episode before we close things out for 2018. And joining us here tonight, it's kind of been a different year for us, Scott. You know, we had a normal rotation for a while of regulars that pretty much came in and out, Kelly and Pete. Mm-hmm. And around May, June, we started to mix things up a bit and really, you know, flip the rotation and get some new voices in here. And we have another one tonight, continuing the trend. You heard him fail miserably in episode 500 in the trivia tournament. Sure. You've probably heard one of his 19 shows on the PlayStation Pop feed. And I think at this point he's challenging me and Jennifer Smith for most podcasts held at PlayStation Nation.
Yes.
He's coming in hot. And that is Mr. Andrew Atherton. Andy, how are you?
Hey, Justin, Scott, thanks for having me. Long time, first time? Or first time, long time. I don't know how it was. But... yeah, got to come out of the gate, you know, charging hard and fast, you know, don't worry, I've got like six more shows I'm going to debut before the end of the year, so we're all good, on a good pace.
Awesome. Well, can't wait to not hear them all. I'm looking. Can't wait to hear them all at PlayStation Pop. Check those out, and we'll talk more about what they entail in a little bit. But tonight, Andy, you are here to talk some wrestling with us really quickly, like 30 seconds to 60 seconds or so. Give us your background as a wrestling fan. When did you start? Did you, you know, I know you're from the area. Did you ever go to any of these shows in MSG? Kind of just what's your real quick relationship with the WWF and with wrestling in general?
Real quick. Okay. Got into it about WrestleMania 2. So I was about 14 probably when that happened around then. I was 16 when this show came out. I probably watched it live on MSG that night. But yeah, I grew up. I got into it. A lot of my friends were into it. And, my first show, I believe, was at Nassau Coliseum. It was a house show, so a bunkhouse brawl that night. Other than that, been watching it, you know, took like everybody else, you know, you have your times when you don't watch it, like, you know, took a break while my kids were young. And now I'm back into it. My son is 11, and he'll be 12 by next WrestleMania. So he's very psyched to be that we got tickets to go. And then, yeah, just been a longtime wrestling fan and just love it to bits. And, you know, if anybody's read any of my articles on there about my wrestling fandom, it was cool watching the show because I haven't seen an MSG house show in years. And I remember, you know, I was about 21 when I got picked out of the crowd to be the ring announcer for, it was a crappy match, but a cool experience. So that's been, you know, that was one of my highlights, getting booed by 14,000 people. So it was a lot of fun.
Was is your son just as excited to meet Sheriff Pete Schermacher at the tailgate?
Oh, yeah.
Okay.
She doesn't get scared.
Very good, very good. All right, so Scott, why don't you set our tone here for this evening?
All right, so we actually, JR, for the next two episodes, this one and our next one, we are going to be on the same day, a live and a taped. This is the live show, and Mr. Winston will be joining us for the taped show. But this is we're in our offices, as Andy mentioned, on 33rd Avenue for the Madison Square Garden live event on November 26th, 1988. So we are beyond Survivor Series, which was of course 2 days before, and now we finish up the year before we head into arguably JR, not just for WWF, but one of the greatest years overall in the history of wrestling, and that is 1989. Mm-hmm. So getting excited for that. All right, so as you know, most of the there was a good hunk of the roster here at the Garden. The other half that evening was actually at another bastion of WWF, another stronghold, and that is the Joe. Well, Joe Louis Arena in Detroit is where they were on this evening. Of course, they're not there anymore. I don't think they go there anymore because now they have the Little Caesars Arena. But the Joe was one of their big hot spots. Here's the card on that evening. Jim Powers defeated Conquistador Uno.
Oh.
I'll be curious to see if that opener compares with ours. Boris Zukov defeated The Shadow. Bad News Brown pinned Hillbilly Jim. The Red Rooster pinned Coco Beware. I'm going to let that hang there, those first four matches. But these last three are actually pretty good. The Hart Foundation and Hacksaw Jim Duggan defeated Dino Bravo and the Rougeaus.
Hmm.
Your Intercontinental Champion, the Ultimate Warrior, defeated the Honky Tonk Man via disqualification. So that feud continues. And in the main event, your World Wrestling Federation champion, the Macho Man Randy Savage, defeated Andre the Giant via DQ. So we know we will not have Savage this evening. Mm-hmm. We do not have Warrior this evening, but we have the two other belts this evening. And one of our big guys, one of the company's big studs in the building tonight. So there was the card at the Joe on this scene.
That undercard is very fitting of Detroit.
Yes. Yes. Maybe this is the card that Jordan Duncan allegedly saw Andre and Warrior, just not in the same match.
Right. I mean, they're both there and a bunch of other crap.
A bunch of the garbage. Garbage. So, your announcers, the same as we've had, good old Ron Trongard. Mm-hmm. And Lord Alfred Hayes and superstar Billy Graham. So, JR, any other notes?
Yeah, just one since Survivor Series, which is just 2 days ago. Jack Tunney, on actually the same day as the show on Superstars, was the guest of the Brother Love Show, was interrupted by Bad News Brown, who asked Tunney why he was receiving no title shots. He then accused Tunney of accepting favors from Miss Elizabeth. Tunney shoved Brown and asked how dare he make accusations, with Brown then grabbing Tunney by the shirt and forcing him to his knees while threatening him. So, Bad News Brown getting antsy for that title shot.
Wow. That's crazy. Could you imagine? You're getting famous for Miss Elizabeth. That's very very risque for 1988 standards, huh? Wow.
It's Elizabeth pegging you. All right. So, we do head back inside the garden with our trio, like you said, Mr. Trongard, Lord Al, and Billy Graham. And our opener is an interesting one, as leaping Lanny Poffo takes on Barry Horowitz. Tough start here with low card talent. Rod says Barry has been talking about a new hold called the bow and arrow, and Graham asks if he invented or if he stole it. Poffo controls early while Billy talks about how Lanny has been hitting the gym hard and bulking up. Poffo cranks a headlock and keeps Barry all off balance. Barry bails to regroup as Al and Billy crack chicken jokes. Barry takes over, pats his back, and gets to work, focusing on the lower back. Lanny mounts a comeback but whiffs on a somersault splash, and Barry gets back to work there, mixing in pin covers, which Al calls sloppy. Barry goes an abdominal stretch and then gets a two on an inside cradle. Back to the ab stretch twice more on and off as the crowd gets restless. Graham urges Poffo to grab some hair and break a rule, but Barry cuts him down with a backbreaker for two. Follows a double underhook snap suplex. Barry takes his time getting up, but Poffo catches him with a punch and unloads a flurry. Poffo eventually gets a sunset flip out of the corner and snags the win. Pretty typical basic opener, to the point and simple. Barry's better than others we've seen in this role, and Lanny just kind of does his thing. So, again, not terrible. Fine, and it was quick. One star for me, Scott.
Let's see. Our match time was 12:33 for this delicious opener.
Oh boy, that's not we've seen openers longer for sure. It didn't,
yeah,
it didn't feel too bad.
No. I have the same. I get the same grade as you. I don't know. I mean, it was okay. Lanny is in the lead right now for the worst hair, because I don't know what Darth Vader helmet he was wearing, but that was not great. I feel like Lanny is kind of lost in the shuffle, even in the jobber department, kind of forgotten. Barry's Barry. I mean, solid enough. 12:33, decent length. The match times tonight kind of go all over the place. I feel like there's a couple of instances where I'm thinking to myself, we don't have anybody else besides this guy. And it actually, there's a bigger, example of that later in the show, but, that's about it, Andy. I got nothing more than that. I mean, solid opener, decent enough, nothing earth shattering. You know, Barry's a good hand for this, and Lanny's Lanny. So, I mean, a fine enough opener, I suppose.
Yeah. I mean, I thought it was kind of a slog to get through. I mean, I always loved Barry Horowitz. He was like one of my favorite jobbers back in the day. Because he had so much more personality than like your Reno Riggins and all these other people. But I like the move where we didn't see it back then a lot. Nowadays you see it with all the cruiserweights and stuff, where Lanny was in a, what was it, like an armbar or something, and he used the referee to flip over and reverse it. That was something we really didn't see much back in 88. But you know, there was too many rest holds, a lot of abdominal stretches, hip tosses, you know. I thought it was I felt like I was in that crowd, like going, oh God, when's this going to be over? But yeah, I gave it a star. I mean, it was some decent moves, but it was like a kind of a slog for an opener to me.
Yeah. These openers are you almost have to expect it at this point. Like, I think, Scott, how many actually quality openers have we had? We had that one random one. Was it Nick Kaniski or whatever? That wasn't bad.
Yes.
But I feel like most months we're in this star range. On these openers, last month was Roma and Davis. September was Houston and Terry Taylor. That was all right. let's see, July, Poffo and Terry Taylor, like that was okay. So, I mean, whatever, they oscillate.
I think what it is is, obviously, particularly this time of the year, obviously during the holidays, Manhattan is a bitch to get around. So maybe they just, a match that people coming in late wouldn't
I think they do it year round. Let people get settled in and get their souvenirs and shit, so.
Yeah, that's what I think it is.
I do want to mention, too, we didn't have it called out here, but this is going to be actually our last dalliance with the superstar. So he's around into early 89. He does some house shows in L.A. and Philly for the L.A. Sports Network and for Prism. But, not Philly. He doesn't do Philly. He does Boston, I should say, for the Nessun. So he does L.A. on Z Channel and then Boston on Nessun. But he's actually done at the Garden. So he leaves in early 89. I don't think he does too much. I mean, obviously he has all the disputes legally with Vince. He's part of the steroid trial in the early 90s and on and off. You know, he's very vocal about the direction of Vince McMahon took wrestling and very negative naysayer. He pops out on that Phil Donahue show during the sex abuse scandal. Like just every time like they were in trouble, he would pop up. But he eventually made amends in 2003. He had that showed up on the episode of Confidential. And then, of course, he goes in the Hall of Fame of 04 and has been, I think, in fairly good standing, still on and off. He had the issues with Linda during the Senate campaign, had some issues with Dusty Rhodes, and then they went back and forth. So, of course, he's still hanging on somehow. He's been rumored to be on his deathbed multiple times.
Well, I think he's on his second liver.
Yeah.
Technically third liver now.
He's had heart failure, double pneumonia, liver complications, internal bleeding. I mean, he's had all kinds of shit. Hepatitis.
Hip replacements, right?
Yeah, hip replacement, bowel obstruction. He's had all kinds of shit. He's still hanging on, though.
Let's put it this way. He is the poster boy for never, besides death, he is the poster boy for never, ever taking steroids.
Right.
Pretty much every single thing that broke and that took his body apart was pretty much because of steroids. So other than death, which, as we'll see over the next, 88, over the next, 25 years, we'll see take a lot of lives. But he is, the poster boy for living with a body that pretty much is goo at this point because of steroids. So it is amazing he's still living.
And obviously had a wonderful, he had 30-year career, world champion. The end days were a little bit rough with the karate kung fu stuff, and his run in the NWA was shaky. He comes back. He had a little fun blip we saw with Butch Reed. But of course, one of the all-time greats. I figured exactly where he placed in our GWWE project, but I know it was on the fairly high end. So that's it. I've enjoyed him more than I expected on some of these in the commentary. I think we talked about this last show. How for years, we had a SummerSlam to go by, at least for us. So we, and he was not good that night. But I thought on these MSGs, I've actually enjoyed his excitement and candor. And he really, I'll say this for him, he really paid attention and knew what was going on with the product. Like, he was pretty dialed into all the storylines and putting the guys over. And I thought he did a nice job on these shows, and I'm actually going to miss him a bit.
He definitely, again, I think this is the benefit of doing this now. The only time we ever think about him is SummerSlam 88, and he's abysmal.
Yeah. Yeah.
But now, now that we're kind of delving deeper, I don't remember him doing this many MSG house shows. And he to his credit, he did a pretty damn good job of knowing what's going on. Obviously he did his homework. I'm finding our old Google sheets. I'm trying to find the final tally, but while Andy's doing his saying his comments, I'll take a look. But he did his homework. He tried. He didn't mail it in. He didn't mail the announcing in. He actually made an effort, and particularly with these, you can't dog an MSG house show. It's too many eyeballs and too many ears. It's not like you're doing a local thing in fucking, Columbus, Ohio, or one of those places where, whatever. MSG, some of them go around across the country, and even in the early days we had tape trading. So, MSG house shows got around. So Andy, to his credit, as much as his body was a, big mess, he was pretty sharp and did his homework, and actually was a pretty good compliment, particularly when you had a guy like Trongard who kind of knew things, kind of didn't. So it was actually important for Alfred and him to kind of keep Trongard in line with how things creatively were going.
Oh yeah. I enjoyed it. I, like I said, I haven't seen MSG house show in a very long time until, you guys got me on the show. But, yeah, I really enjoyed him because, you know, I honestly don't remember. I don't remember Trongard either. But, you know, like I said, I was 16 at the time, which is 30 years ago. But it was a he added something, a lot of, enthusiasm, which kind of came through, you know, and Alfred was Alfred, you know, always loved him, his, with that British, accent and everything, how it was a little different at the time. So, yeah, I mean, I didn't know much of Superstar Billy Graham before that because I hadn't really, you know, it was the 80s, so I didn't really go back. You know, I started watching a little bit of like other companies, but I was never into like the tape trading and all that. I had my friend had a newsletter, but that's as far as I went.
All right, guys, not trivia, but a question here. Where do you think, if you remembered, where did Superstar Billy Graham fall in our final top 100? Andy, what do you think? Where do you think he fell?
Probably on the floor with that hip.
Well, that too. Yes. While his liver was crawling away.
God, I don't want to. I can't do any worse than I did in the trivia tournament.
No, you really.
Yeah, definitely not.
Even if you say 102, you're not going to do any worse. So,
you know, everybody needs to have a. There has to be a Santino Marella lasting a second in the Rumble, right? So I'm going to go with somewhere in the 60s.
Okay. What do you think, Jared? What do you think he fits?
I'm going to say bottom 30s, like 37, 38.
He was as high as 7. On some people's lists, as low as 100. His final number, 55.
Oh, okay. Lower than I thought.
Not bad. Wow. But not bad, though. 55.
I was actually close.
He was ahead of Rick Martel, and he was right behind Rob Van Dam. In fact, another guy we're going to see on our show in a little bit is three spots above Billy Graham. And, of course, there's a myriad of other guys, obviously. So,
mm-hmm.
So there you go. So okay. In 1233... Lanny Poffo defeats Barry Horowitz.
All right.
All right,
so, next up, we have a returning superstar, and it is his first Madison Square Garden appearance after a 5-year absence when he had a quick pop in the early 80s, and that is Kurt Hennig, Mr. Perfect. We talked about him at Survivor Series. He takes on Paul Roma, former Young Stallion. Of course, Hennig had a great showing back at Survivor Series. I jumped over from the AWA earlier in the year. We saw him also at WrestleFest, right? I think we've talked about him, Scott. So we've seen him a few times. First time in MSG, I believe, since, was it 80, late 83,
I looked it up.
I guess, right?
I looked it up, yeah. His last time at MSG, he jobbed to Jose Estrada in 1325 with a flying back elbow on February 18th, 1983.
Okay. So it's actually almost a 6-year, really.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yep. That was the last time he was in the building.
All right. Let's get started. Roma still rocking the Stallion's look and the music, but they're pretty much just about done. So we'll see if he can get things restarted as a solo act. Announcers talk about Hennig's image and how he does in his other sports. Al puts over Roma's record, and Billy gushes over his physique thanks to workouts and a strict diet. Roma gets off to a hot start, sending Perfect outside to cool down and regroup. Roma keeps on top, working the arm, keeping Perfect grounded. Perfect comes back and mares Roma over the top, snaps his neck as he takes over. Perfect starts to batter the neck, cranking on a tight headlock. Roma makes a short comeback, but whiffs on a dropkick and gets chucked to the floor. Perfect swarms Roma, stomping and slugging away, knocking him to the floor a few more times. Billy criticizes him for not going for covers, but Rod thinks he's just enjoying himself out there. Roma comes back with a pretty hot flurry, as Rod says he's alive and well. Perfect is in trouble as Roma heads up top and gets a cross body, but Perfect kicks out at 2. Roma charges, Perfect catches him, hangs on to the top rope, and gets the cradle suplex for the win. This is fine. Roma was feisty. Perfect stays undefeated. It was a nice little showcase in his return, kind of refresh us on what he can do out there. I thought this was a fine second match and a nice showcase for Hennig. I went 2 stars, Andy.
Watching the show, it was like thinking about where they end up in their careers and their legacies, that Roma is the one that got the entrance music, and Kurt was the one standing in the ring.
Like, I noticed that, too. I thought that was funny, too.
So, and then,
he's just clinging. He's clinging to that Stallion. Obviously, yeah. He's the one that didn't want to break up. It must have been Jimmy Powers that was done, because Roman's still clinging to everything here.
Yeah, I think we see that later, too. I'm not sure. You guys are going to have to correct me if I'm wrong later on. I thought I saw something else like that. But Hennig, Kurt is such one of my favorite workers of all time. Mm-hmm. I love his bumping. you know, Rod says it was the first time he saw that next stamp move, which became like one of a, you know, Henning's signature moves, what I think is his kids using nowadays as part of his move set on TV. And then I love the flurry of moves by Roma where his hair doesn't move one inch, not one hair gets out of place. It's so perfect.
Let's get that Tony Danza do.
Yes. Yeah. And it was a great finish with the stun gun into what would become the perfect plex. And then, I don't know, do you want to talk about what happened post-match, or are you guys going to do that in a minute?
Oh, we'll do that. We'll do that in a minute.
Okay, so I give it 2 stars.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, no, what happened next is kind of its own beast. Okay. I gave it 1.5 stars. It was all right. Roma's just not a good – even when he was like this in his earlier days pre-Young Stallions, mm-hmm. He's just not very charismatic. Like, he doesn't really know how to tell a story in the ring. He just kind of, you know, warbles around and gets a couple of moves, gets a shit beat out of him, a couple of moves, and then either wins somehow or jobs. It's evident that for Kurt Hennig, I guess they were calling him Mr. Perfect Kurt Hennig. Of course, yes, the real name would go eventually. Yeah. That Perfect would – we talked about it with Rude, JR. I mean, obviously, move for move, mm-hmm. when it comes to brass tacks, Perfect's a better wrestler than Rick Rude. We know that. But even here, it's obvious that even though, you know, Perfect was here earlier in the decade, I've been watching a ton of old All-Stars on the network from 81 into early 82 when he was here. But obviously, he was on the Paul Roma end of the matches. coming from the AWA, and even at that point in 87, 88 in AWA, there was a little more work rate than here. So I think it's very evident. I'm curious your thoughts. I think it's evident that everybody, even the really great wrestlers, come to the WWF and realize that things are just a little different here compared with elsewhere. And everybody, for some reason, unless you've been here forever, everybody who comes here has to adapt somehow. The style of match is very unique compared to anywhere else in the country. Any of the other promotions, whether it's World Class or AWA or obviously Crockett or, you know, Don Owen in Portland or the LaBelles in LA or whatever, anywhere you're going, they all have a certain style. Most of them very, very mat based, very work rate based. And then you come here and you realize that the audience is trained a certain way. And even guys like Perfect, who are literally perfect in the ring, mm-hmm. have to adapt. Am I kind of crazy in saying that? I feel like you know, this could have been a lot better even with the garbage.
Well, yeah, I mean, no, I think you're right in a way. I mean, they got to slow down, right? I mean, that's what it is,
yeah.
Right? Not every match. There's just a different expectation and structure to the card. Not every match that they're going out there looking to steal a show or tear the house down, especially with a guy like Roma. He's just going out there. It's almost like a TV squash in a way. just going out there. And yeah, I mean, I think there's some credence to what you're saying. I don't know if it's as dramatic. Like, mm-hmm. it's like a. Like crazy level change, like you
right.
know, like
no,
it
no,
would
no,
be in years
right.
to come. But no, I do think there's a different expectation in in-ring style. Play more to the crowd, play more to the camera.
Right.
You know, focus probably a little bit less on rest holds and limb work and stuff like that. So yeah, no, I think there's some credence there. Roma is interesting. He's like a toolsy baseball player that had a lot of promise coming in, and like teams keep trading for him and hoping to be the one to figure him out. Like, you can see why they kept him around and kept trying, because he'd show these, he had the look, young, good looking guy, you know, jacked up, and he had these flashes in there where he'd look real good, like late in the match, but putting the whole mat, like you couldn't put it all together. So he's like a, you know, these guys would come up, hit a bunch of home runs, and then you know, all right, he's finally putting it together, and then he'd go back to what he is. And for most of his career, he's on the back of his baseball card is what he is. But he does have some bumps, and I think he does unlock it later, eventually in spots. But I can see why they kept trying with him.
Yeah. What do you think about Roma specifically, Andy, at this point?
Yeah, he's a good-looking kid. You know, he had his moveset was pretty decent. But, yeah, he just didn't – yeah, something just didn't – something was missing from him. I mean, he does get – better and gets into a better character situation later, but he kind of there was like something just a little off, like JT says, like, you know, a September call up that has a great time, then like next regular season comes around, it's like he's just average, you know, not much better. I mean, I always enjoyed him in the ring, you know, didn't understand you know, when he went to another company, what they did with him. But yeah, he was fine. I mean, you know, he's a serviceable worker, and you know, you could push him when you needed to, and he could you know, take the falls when you had to.
Hmm. All right. Yeah. No, I agree with that. I agree with that. And obviously, you were talking about the whole Stallions breaking up. We see who Powers had to deal with, you know, about 1,000 miles away or whatever in fucking Detroit. At least Roma got like a halfway decent, you know, obviously a guy much better than fucking Conquistador Uno. So, you know, at this point, you kind of figure who, you know, who probably was better off in some ways. But any event, your match length, did I say what our match length was? It was 8:35. So not too bad.
No,
not too bad.
It was fine.
And perfect. Yeah, and Perfect gets a win.
All right. So then, as Andy alluded to earlier, Mr. Fuji shows up, gets in the ring, and announces to everyone, because, of course, some people in the main have not have seen Survivor Series. And I'm not sure if they talked about that. I'm sure they mentioned it on Superstars. But I think it was a smart anyway, the way they did it. Fuji comes out and announces he no longer manages Demolition. He now has a new team, and that is the Powers of Pain, Demolition, so no discipline. And they will pay like Roma did. Promises Powers of Pain will take the belts and kick Roma, but Roma nails him with a dropkick. Powers of Pain come out. They beat up Roma, including a great double team. Warlord holds him up for a suplex, and Barbarian spears him off the top rope. That looked great. And Roma gets fucking stretchered out off of it. I thought this was a good segment to really get Powers of Pain established as heels, and really what they're being set up for is protectors of Fuji. So they're getting that over as their role. So I liked this. I thought it was really good. They really beat the shit out of Roma. I like Fuji smacking them around. And we get a little bit of explanation for Survivor Series. We talked about how kind of confusing it was that he'd give up the champs. You heard, if you listen to the Adams Division Survivor Series show, you heard Peter and Bennett give their take on, you know, what the rationale would be. And so, you know, I thought that made sense. I just don't think they were very clear about it all. And here I think helps a little bit. Fuji basically says they were getting lazy, getting fat, and not caring. And they weren't respecting Fuji anymore. So he was going to take the Powers of Pain to the top. So, Scott, what did you think of the segment? I really dug it.
I liked it a lot. We needed some kind of explanation, and I'm guessing that they probably executed this segment around the loops to give everybody a chance. I mean, obviously, I'm sure at some point it was on the Cindies. I'm sure it was on Superstars.
Well, I'm
going to
check that day
everywhere.
So that day, Superstars was, we said 11:26, right? Mm-hmm. Graham doesn't have anything mentioning it.
Okay.
It doesn't look like they wrestled or anything either. So, I mean, that doesn't mean there wasn't an update segment or something about it, but...
Right, but I'm sure at some point they did a national thing, so they wouldn't have to do it in every market, but... yeah, I mean, he kind of alludes to it 2 days before at Survivor Series, but not with a whole bunch of... not with enough proof or logic behind it. So at least they had to do this for the MSG crowd, because, again, you're probably dealing with the largest both local and TV audience. For when it comes to the local markets. So getting it done here probably was smart, and they can keep doing it around the loop. I'm sure as we look ahead to other venues around these couple weeks, probably the one good thing about not having like a December pay-per-view or whatever is, you know, they've got till mm-hmm. it's already been announced that the Rumble is January 15th. So they've got enough time to flesh it out. So, but it worked out. I liked it a lot, actually. Powers of Pain needed to be established as heavies. They hadn't, you know, they were better suited for it than Demolition. It was evident when you look at them.
Right.
They were better suited for it than Demolition. So the switch was needed.
Yeah, they're really pushing that they respect Fuji and they're here to take care of him and whatnot. So.
Right. So, yeah. What'd you think of the segment, Andy?
Oh, I loved it. I thought they needed to cement them as heels. Mm-hmm. Like, really, like, just beating down. This guy just lost a match. You know, and he's like, you know, kind of an over baby face, low card. But then, like, they just come out and they just beat the crap out of him. That was a sick move. I mean, I like pop when
that
I was watching
awesome,
it.
Yeah.
And you know, and then like Powers of Pain, they need a manager. Mm-hmm. You know, they're talkers. So
yeah,
you know, as evident through their careers going forward, they, you know, I think they both had managers for the most part. You know, when they were together, when they weren't, and yeah, this thought. You know, I did watch Survivor Series to kind of do a little homework, and it was it just kind of came out of nowhere, this double turn, and you needed to, Demolition, it was time for Demolition to be baby faces. So, mm-hmm. You know, Powers of Pain, you know, they just needed to do something to like, just, you know, that was kind of dastardly, so to speak, because I don't think what happened to Survivor Series was dastardly enough.
Yeah, I'm curious to see when things turn a bit for them in the ring, because so far they've been fine. Like, we've seen a lot of squash stuff from them, but like they look good. Like, and they're killing people. Like, they're really good squash guys. So we'll see. Maybe it's the longer matches where things start to turn for them. We haven't seen too much of that just yet. All right, up next is a continuation of a feud that started about a month and a half ago or so, and that is Ted DiBiase against the man he tried to purchase, the Mighty Hercules. Ted's rocking the awesome green suit here. Always looking sharp. Too bad, though, he never did the green tights. Just always did the green suit with the black tights. Herc comes out to a big pop. Ted rants about buying and owning him. Herc also has some new music with his regal, of course, trumpet-filled sound that we would come to know and love for many years following this. Ted attacks at the bell. Hercules swats him off and unloads with strikes, clotheslining Ted to the floor. We get quite the rant here from Rod, talking about how you can't buy and own people anymore, thanks to Abraham Lincoln. that was quite poetic. Hercules battering Ted with strikes and slinging him into the top turnbuckle. Outside, Herc chases Ted around, but Ted catches him with a fist to the head and gets to work. Herc tries to mount a comeback in the corner, peppers Ted with fists. Ted cuts him off by going to the eyes and slings him to the floor. Ted works him over out there, maintains control of the ring, dodging a Hercules elbow. The crowd tries to rally Herc a bit, but he survives a suplex. Ted slaps him around, getting a little cocky here, leading to Herc dodging a blind elbow off the middle rope. Herc fires away and levels some clotheslines and a nice tight power slam, and then he paintbrushes his rival, but Ted's able to kick him into the ref, taking him down as well. Herc comes back with his backbreaker submission, but Virgil runs some interference to force the break. Herc batters Virgil, but Ted loads his fist with something and drops Herc with a punch for the win. Ted beats up Hercules after the bell, shoves money in his mouth, and then has Virgil grab the chain. Herc avoids the attack, fights up both men, and ends up on top to a pretty nice reaction. I thought this was pretty fun, had a nice hectic pace to it, some good heat, and Herc has shown some nice fire and a fun comeback. It's been kind of a nice break getting him out of the heel. Like we saw some good stuff from him as a heel, but it's a nice mix-up to see how he'll do as a face here, and he's pretty energetic and fired up. DiBiase seals the win, as always. He continues to torture Herc, and the feud rolls on. Andy, I dug this. I went 2.5.
Oh, yeah. So did I. I thought it was great. I mean, was this the first time since the whole trying to buy him thing that they really got his hands on him one-on-one?
Because yeah, he fought Virgil. Right, Scott, that other MSG we watched. Yeah, he fought Virgil in October. Yeah. And then they fought at Survivor Series.
But DiBiase was hiding.
Right.
He was trying to duck him the whole time. Yeah, so, yeah, that's why like the crowd like really popped.
Yeah, yeah. When, they were pumped when it got him.
Yeah, because it was a fun the crowd really started to pick up here for the night. You know, with Herc beating down DiBiase, you know, I always loved the way Herc hit, like, you know, the way he did his punches, his kicks. I just thought there was like a lot of force behind him, even though, you know, we know it wasn't. But, you know, DiBiase was good, methodical, cocky, you know, a good finish. You know, Herc got his licks in, but, you know, DiBiase cheats to win, and then Herc, you know, ends up on top, you know, by chasing him off with the chain. So, yeah, I thought it was solid 2.5 stars.
I gave it a 2.5. I liked it too. I feel like Herc needs to turn the corner, and we've talked about that, particularly his ability. Mm-hmm. And DiBiase is a good guy to do that with. And I thought the match was pretty good. I thought it was a solid back and forth. Your match time was 9:06, so a good length, a good amount of time. I like Hercules as a face. Crowd seems to love him. I think it was a good move for him. And I think he's a great opponent for DiBiase right now. Mm-hmm. Not much to, you know, he's been kind of stuck in limbo for a bit. And, you know, with his part of the whole Hogan Savage situation behind him, he needs to move on. Remember, this is like the first time he's dealing with something outside of that feud, because he pretty much has been involved with Hogan
right. Since
he's been here.
And Savage.
So, yeah, and Savage and, you know, Andre and that. So this was a good time for him to siphon off to something else as we get into the new year. And this is actually a great move for him. I think the slave stuff needs to kind of – I think they need to amp down the vocabulary.
Yeah.
I think
it's probably good that Jesse's not here, because he's the –
Yeah.
He's sure the worst with it.
Some type of Kunta Kinte reference. But, yeah, I think it's a good move for both guys. The match was solid enough, 2.5. And I like Herc. You and I have mm-hmm. been very complimentary, JR.
He's definitely one of the guys he's risen in my ranks because of the stuff that we've watched. Like, he did okay in my GWE. I think I had him in the honorable mentions, but I probably wouldn't have had him there before we started this reboot. He's definitely a guy that's gained in my eyes.
Yeah. No, I agree 100%. And I think it's solid for DiBiase. to find a different guy. You know, he's been dealing with bigger guys. Like, I mean, he had all year he's been wrestling an exemplary guy in Savage. So now we'll see him have to kind of work a little extra with a guy who's, you know, obviously doesn't have that kind of ability. So fun to see. Yeah, no, solid out of the gate. What do you think, Andy?
I was like, Herc. I mean, you know, his tights are a little tight, a little small, I think, for a guy his size. It was like
he's crammed into those things.
He's really, like, I think, he must have gotten somebody else by mistake backstage. That's what I think sometimes. But, yeah, I liked Hercules, you know. He was one of the first that, you know, that they dropped the last names, probably, that I can remember, because he came in, he was Hercules Hernandez, I believe, when he came in, right?
Yes, yep.
Yeah, so, yeah, he was good. I thought, I couldn't believe when they did that whole angle, like, you know, when he's like, I just bought Hercules, and he's like, Hercules has had the best face. Like, what the fuck, Bobby? Are you kidding me?
Sell me to this guy? No, and I agree with you, Scott, too. I think it's a pretty good fit for DiBiase. It's a good fit for Herc. He's, you know, to turn face and get fed a guy who's been coming off like a year-long main event run is a pretty big get for him. Like, they could have turned him and stuck him with someone else, but to get in there with pretty much the number one or two heel, I think, you know, I think that was a big get for him to turn him and put him in that spot. It shows a lot of faith in Hercules. I know they're trying to do the third mega power thing, but,
yeah. No, it worked out good. I thought it worked out good, and a good match for Herc, and a good opponent for DiBiase to move on from, to move on to.
All right, we head back into the ring as God, my God, how is Special Delivery Jones still hanging around? He is taking on the African Dream Akeem here. Jones moldy as fuck, but still in great shape. He looks real pretty ripped here, but I'm just shocked he's still hanging on in this job role. Akeem dances out to Slick, with Slick the Jive Soul Bro, his first appearance in MSG in this glorious gimmick. Rod has a great line here. I understand there's been some magnificent change orchestrated by Slick. As Akeem comes out, magnificent indeed. Graham says Slick used witchcraft and then spends many minutes talking about Akeem's outfit. That goes on for a bit. We had some stalling and then a lockup to finally get started. He is now from a third world country. I wonder what kind of currency he has in his pocket. Graham also muses about Akeem. Jones ducks and dodges and hammers away while mocking Akeem strutting. SD keeps peppering away. Akeem shoves him down and dances around. Graham says Slick is speaking Swahili and witchcraft as Akeem pounds away. SD battles back and lands a few shots, eventually taking Akeem off his feet, but Akeem cuts him down with a back elbow, finishes with a clothesline, a big splash. Nothing doing here, but God, I love this gimmick. It's so much fun to watch. SD is still spry enough for job duty, so good on him. And the commentary is just out to lunch throughout this whole thing. I mean, just everything they're saying is fucking cringy. I went a half a star, Scott, and that's all purely based on Akeem dancing.
I gave it a half star, too. We all know how much my feelings about SD Jones, but at this point, yeah, I think it's time to find some younger jobbers.
Yes.
But I believe, JR, that Jive Soul Bro debuts. It's MSG debut is here.
Right, yeah. So he hasn't used it with Butch Reed or anything?
I don't because
he's
so.
Had it. Yeah, well, he had it with Pile
maybe
Driver, right?
Okay.
I feel like he may have had it with Reed at some point or something.
Okay. I feel like it debuted with Akeem because the theme fit Akeem. So, but a good length match, 4:42. That's all we needed to put over the new gimmick. And SD was fine in the role of, you know, as we know from WrestleMania 1, he's exemplary at putting over large dudes. Worked out perfectly here. And, good win. Good win for Akeem here, Andy, to kind of put the gimmick over.
Yeah, I thought it was, you know, typical big man, little man match. You know, there was no great back and forth. You know, SD got in, like, a little too much offense, though, I think, since Akeem was a recent character change. But, yeah, nothing much. It was like, you know, Akeem was basically – he was just there to get beat. And, you know, I can remember when he first debuted as Akeem. I didn't really know of the one man gang much because I didn't, you know of the other wrestling organizations. I basically got into wrestling with WWF and then it was just that. And then later on, probably another year about from now is when I started watching WCW or NWA or whatever. And I started finding other things, and I was like, I learned more about the one man gang. But yeah, as Akeem, yeah, I thought that he, you know, he owned that gimmick. You know, he just embodied it. he tried his best, and mm-hmm. it was fun. That's all there is to it.
No, he definitely went all in on it. That's for sure. And they use him. Like, they have big plans for him. He's obviously in a pretty big angle over the next 6 months or so. So, but no, God bless him. He's out there dancing away. The commentary is awful, though. It's a mess across the board with this. So, all right. So there you go. Akeem picks up the win, and he's, of course, getting set up for some pretty big stuff over the next few months. That brings us to our tag team championship match. We saw the challengers earlier. That is the Powers of Pain taking on the champs Demolition. Big title match here between two power teams with a fresh rivalry mixed in. Fuge leads out the Powers of Pain who still have their theme music. The champs get a huge pop as the fans finally cheer them on. The champs come in hot and beat the Powers of Pain right out of the ring and then corner Fuji, but he escapes unscathed. We settle in with Axe and Barbarian going at it while Axe beating the big man down to the mat. Demolition takes turns beating on the challengers, eventually sending them out to talk to Fuji. We reset with Smash and Barbarian, but the Powers of Pain eventually trap Smash in the corner to turn the tide. Smash comes back with some heavy clubbing blows. Axe comes in and slams Warlord down and clamps on a chin lock. Fuji smacks Axe in the head with his cane, and his charges take over. Fuji stays involved, choking Axe with the cane where he can as the Powers of Pain beat on him. Axe eventually escapes and Smash comes in hot. He cleans house and clears the ring. Fuji comes in with the cane, triggers a double DQ as things break down, and the champs clean them out and stand tall. Decent and never really slowed down, but also on the flip side, never really got into much of a flow. I thought just, you know, the first steps really in this big feud. Powers of Pain obviously going to keep chasing. Fuji's going to keep leading them. Demolition has faced this feels right now that it's done. The crowd felt like they could finally really get behind them. And it's kind of, you know, they obviously get a huge pop here. This feud, you can see why they decided to do this feud and do things the way they did. As soon as it's all in place, it's really clicking. And this is another one that's interesting to me because if you're just watching the pay-per-views, it seems so baked by the time we get to the big match at 5. But, God, it's really hot here. Like, you can see why they were doing what they were doing. Crowd's super into it. The teams match up well. I dug this. 2 stars, Andy.
Oh, yeah. I thought it was, you know, a huge face reaction when they came out. You know, on MSG, not everybody got the camera, like, following them from the back in. Usually that was reserved for, like, Hogan or Warrior or Macho Man. In fact, a Demolition guy meant that, you know, these guys are going to be big time cheered for out there. And yeah, I mean, it was a good, you know, back and forth, you know, hashtag teams and just beating the crap out of each other, you know. And it was great that it was a schmoz in this first match because it was like just really the beginning of the feud. And it just, they had a lot of more work to do on this. So, I mean, yeah, and it was time for Demolition to be faces. I'm curious though. You guys are more up on this. Did they wear the whole gear, like the mask and everything, when they were faces, or was that just when they were heels? For what you guys remember?
Oh yeah, no, I'm pretty sure they wore the mask.
Yeah, because I'm trying to remember if they just, you know, that was part of like the whole change. But yeah, no, I really dug it. You know, I liked these teams growing up, so I was always into, like, you know, these big face painted teams like them and the Warriors. So yeah, I dug it. I gave it 2 stars.
I also gave it 2 stars. And this is a big deal because Demolition needed to, again, even though we got an explanation from Fuji, we're still not quite sure what the deal is here. But for Demolition specifically, who got a crazy pop, so we all knew this was inevitable. The crowd was going to be into this. We didn't want to give them too much time because you were talking about two kind of big power Haas teams. So giving them, you know, 16 minutes wasn't going to fly. So they gave them a perfect amount of time. They gave them 5:59. So what you were saying, JR, about it not quite getting going, I think that was on purpose. I think that was by design to a certain extent. I don't think they wanted to give them too much time. Just enough to brawl a bit, realize that this whole feud's going to just be about there's no pins here. The Powers of Pain want the gold, and Demolition just wants to beat the shit out of Fuji and his new, you know, chumps. So having said that, I thought that the match worked well for what it was at that moment, knowing there was more to come. And admittedly, you obviously know that these two teams are not going to give you, you know, the fucking brainbusters and rockers. So I mean, you're going to go in there with a lot of clubbing and bludgeoning. And you don't want to give it too much time, particularly as we're just getting started with this feud. So I thought just under 6 minutes was a perfect amount of time. It was a quick snapshot. They both lost their tempers, particularly Demolition. And I think that's perfectly fine for the situation right now. So I was fine with a short match, a quick sprint. served its purpose. Fuji, you know, we've been talking, JR, about, you know, managers and Bobby and Jimmy Hart, and I feel like even though he was managing the tag team champions, that Fuji was kind of lost in the shuffle. I know he's, you know, not one of your favorite guys, but now I feel like he's getting back in the he's back kind of on the in the spotlight right now.
Yeah, well, he was starting to feel like an afterthought with Demolition, really. I mean, yeah, I think that's what you're trying to say. Yeah, I mean, he was – Demolition's starting to talk more. They're getting over, and he's just kind of becoming, you know, a side piece. And especially they were almost with Jimmy Hart more than him for a bit there with all the Hart Foundation stuff. So and the Rougeau shit. So, yeah, it's – yes, if you care about Fuji getting kind of rebooted and rehabbed and being looked to more of a threat, then, yes, this made sense.
Okay. So there we go.
All right. So
Andy,
Andy
did this. No.
He already went. Okay. You all right?
Yeah, I'm good.
Not you, good. Him.
Me? Oh. Yeah, I'm good. Yeah, I'm good. Just want to make sure. Jesus. I got thrown off by the back and forth because you did the back and forth with the with the Fuji segment. So I wasn't sure.
God, you get another guy your age on. It's like we're in a fucking old folks home trying to get through this thing.
Jesus. We got enough age shaming in the chats right now. You're the master of age shaming.
I wasn't even in there. I didn't say a word during that whole thing.
No. It's all that you know, the southern gal down there throwing the most shade, I think.
Obviously, we'll have her on Year in Pop 2016, apparently, because nothing happened before that. So anyway, why don't we take a break? Not bad so far. Not bad so far. Back and forth, JR, talent-wise, but a lot of storytelling so far, which we don't get a lot of sometimes with our MSG shows, but a lot of storyline advancing so far.
Yeah, I agree.
With the Gandhi so far.
Yeah, it seemed like it was kind of like they must have hit the reset button a little bit about a month sooner, because this is like the start, like a lot of fresh feuds coming from out of Survivor Series and a lot of people, like a lot of first time matchups come in here. So yeah, I really enjoyed the show so far.
Okay. Well, when we return, we will continue this exceptional card. How many matches we have left? One. We got some interviews, and then we have, let's see, 1, 2, 3, 4 matches left. A couple of long ones. Another title match that actually surprised me, and much more. But first, let us listen to some fine Christmas music as we go into break. Because
on our Abe Lincoln. But the kids all know how we came to life one day. There must have been some magic here that old Silk had they found. For when they placed me on his head, he began to dance around. Promotional consideration paid for by the following. PlaySweet Nation's Justin Rosero and Chad Campbell here, and we want to let you know that we have a ton of great podcasts available to you on iTunes, Stitcher, Google Play, and PlaySweetNation.com, and we now offer them to you on two great feeds. On the PlaySweet Nation Wrestling feed, we bring you the Mothership, the Place to Be podcast, Main Event, Survey Says, Wrestling War Zone, a Monday Night Wars podcast retrospective, No Holds Barred, Jeff Learns Wrestling, and our monthly pay-per-view reaction shows. On top of that, we're also dipping into the vault, re-releasing the entire catalog of Where the Big Boys Play for your enjoyment. In addition to these full-length shows, we also deliver special network pod blasts on topics old and new.
The Place to Be Nation pop feed is loaded with great content, offering such tremendous shows covering the land of pop culture, such as Geek and Sassy, Talkin' Pop, the Glenn Butler Podcast Hour Spectacular, Sunday Groove, PTB In Play, Freak Out Drive-In, Songs with Friends, Looking Forward, Looking Back, and Lucha Undead, as well as a veritable podcast heaven for comics fans with the Hard Traveling Fanboys, Sellers Points, Conversation Comics, DC Post Crisis Management, Marvel Age, and Marvel Age Masterclass, plus weekly pod blasts that cover the gamut of comic topics. The feed is also filled with insightful sports content, including the NBA team, This Week in the NFL, and more.
And you can find all these current shows plus archives of our past podcasts, including The Kevin Kelly Show, as well by subscribing to both feeds on iTunes. And while there, be sure to rate and leave feedback as well. All these shows plus others available at PlaySweetNation.com. We cover pro wrestling, sports, movies, comics, in-depth stretch projects, and more. Be sure to support our site by using PlaySweetNation.com/Amazon while doing your online shopping. And download our free PTB Vintage Vault Refresh ebooks via the links on our site. We also want to thank our friends at Boneheads Wing Bar, ProWrestlingOnly.com, and TheHistoryOfWrestling.com. Be sure to follow us on Facebook, Twitter, Instagram, and Tumblr as well. PlaySweetNation.com, the only place to be in your pop culture world.
Hey, this is Ed Banger Thrasher, and you're listening to Where? What the fuck is it? The Place to Be podcast. So you better not miss it because I'm on it.
Welcome back. Hope you enjoyed that break. I hope you enjoyed the first half of our look at the November 1988 Madison Square Garden House Show. I'm Scott Criscolo, Andy Adamson here tonight. And Scott, since we're pretty much within the same week, I believe we have no music or number one song in the nation tonight. So we did go in with some more Christmas music. Hopefully everyone's enjoying that. And hopefully you will all have not a blue Christmas, but a white Christmas and a happy Christmas. I don't know if that's even the song that's playing underneath us right now. I haven't really planned it, but we'll see. So, Scott Criscolo, talk about your pop culture corner. I'm all thrown off about my song segue.
As long as you don't play Baby It's Cold Outside, you're okay.
Well, we're not in Cleveland, so we can.
Okay.
Stupid. It's like, Baby, it's cold outside. It Let me tie you down. It's cold.
It is a fucked up song.
Only Giante and I can give it justice. Anyway,
it's funny because it's funny that it's catching on. I feel like it was our first Christmas episode, like in 2011, Scott.
Yeah.
That we went on, like we talked about that song a lot and went on a thing about it. I thought it was that one. Maybe not, but I feel like we've been on that for a while.
There was another one that you went on about, too, though.
Oh, Santa Baby.
Santa Baby. Yeah.
That bitch looking
for All right. In any event, like you said, we will hold off on... because the new Billboard countdown came out today, but since our next episode is going to be a little shorter, we'll give that one some more time. We'll give you the Billboard Top 10 that came out today, November 26th, on our next episode. There were no movies because we already did this weekend's movies when we did the Survivor Series, so no movies. So, JR, you're good from having to do any strange foreign Russian names or German or whatever.
That is my favorite foreign movie. Or is it your very foreign movie?
It's your very favorite foreign movie. She doesn't come to the bar anymore. Mm. Anyway. So let us leave the theater, leave the stage, but take the field. All right. Now, Andy, you came over to my desk today, and I told you this. Regardless of your match grades, your analysis, whatever, anything about this show, at the moment, as of course, for those that may have forgotten, for the 1988 NFL season, we're doing JR versus the world because, as we saw, Kelly Nelson brought about as much competition as SD Jones when it came to football pick making. So, we decided to do JR versus the world. JR versus the world. So, we've had four of them so far, JR. J. Arsenio Di Amato and you went tit for tat. We were even after those.
No, tit for tat.
Tit for tat. And then. Mr. Winston beat you by three when he was here.
Cheated.
And then on our last episode, our good man Greg Phillips tied you. So,
quite frankly, right now, I don't buy it.
So, Mr. Atherton, you actually have three. You have three on JR right now. So don't blow it and have Peter Winston have to retake the lead. So, all right. We are going to do, because we'll be doing this again next with the next episode, even though we're on the same day, our last episode with Greg, we did week 12, which was last week's NFL games. This week, we will do this current weekend's games, which is week 13 of the 1988 NFL season. So we have some Thanksgiving games to discuss. And then on our next episode, when Peter Winston's here, we will do the following week, week 14. So, JR, plenty of games for you to try and win yet another championship. All right. We'll begin with the two games that were on the same day as Survivor Series. And, of course, the two home teams, even though in your first episode, a great debate, Andy tried to destroy all of the great Thanksgiving traditions, you and Aaron and Jordan, but you failed miserably, of course.
Hey, Jordan defended it. So because
well, that's because one of his teams is in it. That's because Andre the Giant was quarterback for the Lions, probably. So anyway. All right, so let's go to the Silverdome in Pontiac, JR, to start things off. Mm-hmm. And the Lions hosted the Minnesota Vikings on this Thanksgiving.
Lions at home on Thanksgiving.
Okay. Andy?
Yeah, I'm going Lions also.
All right. Great start. They got shut out. Vikings went 23-0.
Very good.
So things don't change in 30 years for the Lions.
They still suck.
Of course, our afternoon game takes us to the Hole in the Roof, Texas Stadium in Irving, where the Cowboys and the Houston Oilers in the Battle of Texas, Andy.
I'm going Houston.
Yeah, I'll take Houston as well.
Oilers win as we begin. We'll begin a stretch of Cowboy meltdowns.
That has continued until this day.
Well, no, not at all. 25-17 the final. The Oilers win by 8. All right, let's go to this Sunday's games, which would be the next day. We'll go to Three Rivers Stadium in Pittsburgh, JR. The Steelers host Kansas City.
Steelers host Kansas City. I will take I'll go KC here.
Okay. Andy?
Yeah, I'm going KC also. I think the Steelers weren't that good then. I think it was that the Bubby Brister era?
Well, Steve DeBerg.
Oh.
Threw for 278 yards for the Chiefs, but Steelers win 16-10. So there you go. All right, let's stay in the state of Pennsylvania and go to the Vet in Philly, where the trash bag Eagles host the Phoenix Cardinals. Andy?
I'm going Eagles at home.
Yeah, me too.
Eagles win 31-21. Let's go to Giants Stadium in the Meadowlands, the J-E-T-S Jets, hosting the Miami Dolphins, JR, the usual war between Ken O'Brien and Dan Marino.
Squish them fish, baby. I'll go Kenny O.
All right. I'm going Fins.
Dan Marino threw for 353 yards, but the Jets win the shootout.
Oh. Yeah, baby.
38-34. Don't you wish you could score 38 points now?
They did week one, but I think they scored 38 total since.
All right, let's go to Cincinnati for everyone's most exemplary and high moral fiber team, the Cincinnati Bengals. Actually, at the time, they were actually very
I believe Marvin Lewis, that was his first year of coaching.
Yes. It was only petty theft at that time. The Bengals hosting the Buffalo Bills, Andy.
Bengals.
Yeah, I'll take Cincy.
Cincy wins 35-21. Let's go to Soldier Field in Chicago for the Bears and the Packers. Big war. As always, let's see, where are we? 3-6, JR.
The Bears.
Yeah, I think the pack wasn't that good then. Probably I'm going to go Bears.
Bears throw a shutout, 16-0. Let's go to Fulton County Stadium in Hotlanta, where Mr. Campbell and Mr. Duke's Falcons host the Tampa Bay Buccaneers. Andy.
Oh, Falcons.
Oh, what a shitty game. Yeah, Atlanta.
Falcons win 17-10. It probably was a shitty game. Vinny Testaverde threw for 190.
The Bucs let's go to the orange unis then still.
Oh yeah. Oh yes, they definitely. Oh yeah, they had the they had the creamsicles for like another 10 years. actually longer than that. No, about 10 years. Let us go to RFK Stadium in Washington. The Redskins hosting Cleveland. JR.
I'll take the Brownies.
I'll go Redskins.
Brady Kosar throws for 219. Browns win 17-13. I knew you were going to flush this lead in the toilet. Let us go to the Murph. Jack Murphy Stadium in San Diego, where the Chargers host the San Francisco 49ers. Andy.
Niners.
Who was it in the Niners?
San Diego.
Niners.
Yeah, Niners roll, 48-10. Let's go to Mile High Stadium in Denver. The Broncos host the L.A. Rams, JR.
I'll take the Rams.
All right, either I'm going to get the lead back or blow it completely, so I'm going Broncos.
Well, Jim Everett threw for 365 yards for the Rams, but the Broncos win at home, 35-24. Let's go to the Hoosier Dome in Indianapolis, where the Colts host the New England Patriots. Andy.
Colts.
Yeah, I'll take Indy.
This is not Brady versus Peyton. It is Flutie versus... Who cares? But the who cares wins. Colts 24, Patriots 21. Let's go to the Superdome in New Orleans, where Mr. Atherton's New York Football Giants taking on the Saints, JR.
I'll take the G-Men.
Got to go G-Men. Sorry, Reesh.
This game looked about as exciting as that other one, about that Falcons-Bucks game. Giants win 13-12. And let's go to Monday night at the Kingdome in Seattle. The Seahawks hosting the Los Angeles Raiders. Andy.
I'm going Raiders.
Yeah, I'll take the Raiders.
Dave Craig throws for 220. Seahawks win.
I almost picked them. God damn it.
35-27.
Seahawks were still in the AFC then, right?
Yes, they were.
Oh, so it was a division matchup.
Yes, it was.
Okay. All right, well, I gained one game. So, not bad. I got a few more weeks to gain, two more.
You didn't totally blow it, Andy. Nice job.
I did better than I thought I would.
Exactly. So, anyway, so...
By the way,
so,
can you get any more ringers that were actually watching at this time? You're going to get someone who was like 30, 35 when they're in this fucking game? Anyone you can find that was actually watching these games, you're trying to pull
we'll
in
have Jenny do them. We'll have Jenny do them. Nice. Next time. How's that? She might have watched in 2015. We'll see.
Yeah, this week we have fuck, I just said Frank Gifford on to pick the games. Interesting.
All right, let's go to let's see if the NBA was playing on this evening. Usually, I believe back in the day they took the holiday off. They may not have. Let's take
special
a look.
Guest this week for the pick. I'm from 88. We got Dandy Don Meredith in the booth. Nice even playing field.
Oh God. All right. Well, next week we'll have your son pick. We'll have Big Al throw a dart. We'll see what happens there. There you go. All right. Okay. In the NBA on this evening, there was a slew of games. Wow, 11 games. The team that whose arena we're taking up, which is the Knicks, they must have done a split. They must have played earlier in the day because they were home that day and beat Cleveland 127-112. So they must have thrown people out at like 2 o'clock to set up the venue for the ring. So they must have played earlier in the day. Let's see. Celtics lost 104-91 to the Hawks. The Lakers lose in Detroit 102-99 in a rematch of the year before's NBA Finals. And finally, let's take a look at the Frozen Pond because, like Mr. D'Amato, we have another Scrub Ranger fan in our midst. So let us see how the good old Boston Bruins did on this. And, of course, our other favorite team, the Hartford Whalers. Let's see here. Site is being a little witchy tonight. Let's see. All right. Witchy here we go. Woman. Witchy woman. All right. Let's see. Well, speaking of the Bruins, dropped 8 goals on the Blackhawks on this evening, winning 8-2 at the Garden. The Rangers, Mr. Atherton, 6-4 winners out on the island over the New York Highlanders.
Oh, I hate the Islanders.
And the Whale with a win. They beat the Nordiques. Two teams we wish were back. 4-2, the final at Le Colisée.
Did Carolina do their throwback night yet with those unis yet?
They're doing one later in the month. The one in Carolina is later this month. I think it's the day before Christmas Eve. The one in Boston, I think, is in March.
Ah, cool.
Kicking around the possibility of going that game. It's a Tuesday night, so we'll see. Anyway, there is your Pop Culture Corner. JR, back to the Garden.
Sean Mooney with Demolition with Broken Fuji's cane. They're ready for another shot at the powers of pain. They've thwarted Fuji the Stooge and will kick his teeth in at any time. Mooney's then with Slick and the Big Boss Man who say that Hulk Hogan will be beaten helpless and humiliated. Boss Man says he taught Hogan about respect for law and order and he'll prove Hogan is just a man and put him out of wrestling. And then Mooney talks to the powers of pain and Fuji who say they want another match. And the POP will take the belts for him. Fuji wants anything goes match and powers of pain say the belts will be theirs. That brings us to our next random match coming out of the break. And if there was ever a match put on just to allow people to continue pissing and buying beer, that is Nikolai Volkov taking on Iron Mike Sharp. Pretty random one on paper and not a pretty one on paper. Nikolai solo this month. He sings the anthem. Sharp rolls in the ring, cuts off the singing with a wild flurry of offense. It's kind of weird seeing Sharp as a face. Rod says he respects the right for Nikolai to sing, but he doesn't respect his actual singing. Sharp keeps unloading on the Russian, but Nikolai comes back with a kick to the chest and more boots. Sharp withstands some strikes and fires back. The two hosses trade punches with Nikolai's shitty selling mixed in. Things ebb and flow until a Nikolai atomic drop gives them control, which leads to strikes and chokes. Sharp dodges a clothesline, comes back with some punches, and these may be the two most awkward and stiff guys to ever be in a ring together, I think. So watching them trying to work together is quite the sight. Nikolai cuts him off again. Sharp comes back with a rough-looking dropkick for two. Sharp goes to the boot and loads his arm pad, but Nikolai thwarts him and headbutts his gut. Sharp misses a charge. Nikolai rolls him up for the win. Sloppy and messy, but hard-hitting and filled with some energy and worked as a hoss sprint. It was fun in spots, and it ended right before it started to drag. I actually want to star in this. I didn't mind it. Even as awkward, maybe because it was kind of a spectacle. And I'm curious. I'm going to look quick on Graham's site if like there was some kind of subbing here. I would assume Nikolai was wrestling solo originally because Boris was in Detroit, as we heard earlier. So obviously he was playing. I'm just curious if he was here to fight someone else. I'm just looking real quick on Graham's site.
I didn't see a redo.
Yeah, no, nothing. So this looks like it was scheduled. So there you go. So yeah, one star, Scott.
Yeah, I was totally confused on this. I gave it a star too. Your match time, a very manageable for these guys, 5:27. Mm-hmm. I have no idea what the fuck's going on here. I don't understand why. And Iron Mike Sharp was kind of wrestling as a heel. He was loading up the leather thing. I have no idea what the fuck's going on.
It must have been. It must have had to be someone who, probably one of those fucking guys that quit.
JYD maybe.
Survivor Series, Morocco.
Patera.
Yeah, Patera. It had to have been one of those guys originally planned, and then they quit and they went in with him. Blair maybe. You know what I mean? Like who? It had to be. Had to be one of those guys.
Yeah, because this makes no sense whatsoever. Fortunately, again, they didn't give it a lot of time. It was a lot of clubbing. And you could tell that the two were all, like, screwed up and fumbling around. So you could tell that they weren't totally prepared for this. Yeah, not much to go with here, Andy. I, again, Nikolai's partner is over in the other venue. So just kind of going through the motions here. Obviously, it's evident he was not supposed to wrestle Iron Mike Sharp here. He obviously was supposed to wrestle somebody else. So they did their best in the 5.5 minutes they had.
Yeah, I wrote horribly sloppy.
Oh, yeah.
I gave it a half star. Lord Alfred said during the match, he never saw Iron Mike get that much offense in. I pretty much agree with that. It was, Nikolai was just, I mean, I like Nikolai as a character, but as a wrestler, he never, he was off. He missed a lot. It was just really, really sloppy. It was pretty much between this and the opener. I was like, oh God, they're really allowing people to go to the bathroom in the concessions to give them some extra time here. Yeah. It wasn't good. Half star.
I'll tell you this though. I'd rather watch this than those fucking Mike Sharp matches we used to watch, back in 85, Scott. Remember where he would always go, like those time limit draws. I feel like they would never fucking end. He would stall and stall and stall. We'd go 15, 20 minutes in those matches. Those first few times he was on, like in 85. So I'll take this 5 minute slot fest with Nikolai any day over that fucking mess. All right, the Fink comes out. He introduces Classy Freddie Blassie for a hello to the crowd. Greg Valentine's in the ring for our next match. He wants a handshake, but Blassie doesn't trust him, and he walks off. Blassie then steps in for Graham on commentary for the next match. That does bring us to a reignition of an old rivalry back in the day, and this is kind of a nice little treat as Tito Santana takes on Greg the Hammer Valentine. Tito has some new music as well, so it looks like we're starting to filter in more music for the faces here late in the year. We've seen a few different songs pop up. Blassie puts over both men, says they're as even as it gets in the ring, but he doesn't agree with Hammer using that shin guard. The ref wants to check it, and Rod refuses to believe it's legit. Rod also reminds us of Hammer's issues with Billy Graham. Tito works the arms, we get going. The Hammer clubs back on him, battering his head with elbows. Tito fires right back, and Hammer bails to regroup. Tito keeps in control. When he returns, until Hammer levels him with a hard right hand. Rod wonders why Tito has the wrap on his hammy as Greg drops a headbutt to the groin and goes to the chin lock. Hammer slams Tito down and heads up and up top and clobbers Tito on the back of the head. Hammer keeps laying in tight elbows and cranks the neck. Tito battles back as Rod says Valentine is being pounded and pounded hard. Tito grabs a chin lock now and twists into a side headlock as he grinds away. Hammer works free, gets to work on the leg as Blassie says Tito wasted his time on a headlock instead of something more meaningful. Hammer runs through his methodical strikes, but he can't finish off Tito. He's battering the knee and leg, but Tito eventually explodes and slugs away with a hot flurry from his knees. Tito goes to the second rope, but eats a hard right hand that cuts him back down. Hammer pounces and beats on the leg some more and then tries to keep Tito pressed to the mat by pinning his wrist down. Tito crouches Hammer to work free as Freddy puts over his Latin fire. Tito gets two on an inside cradle, unloads another flurry to drop Hammer, and now Tito works the leg, but Hammer blocks the figure four and drops an elbow on the knee. Hammer twists around the shin guard and goes to the figure four, but Tito blocks it with a small package for two. Tito kicks out of another figure four, throws Hammer to the post. Hammer recovers and tries again, but Tito knocks him to the floor. Tito meets him out there. He gets decked by Hammer, who rolls inside, but doesn't beat the count as the ref calls it a time limit draw. The two battle after the bell until Hammer bails. And I thought this was a good, solid, hard-hitting battle. A little bit sluggish at the start, and then it kind of got cooking. And once it did, it was damn good, especially with Tito was just fighting Hammer from his knees. Real nice piece of nostalgic magic here, but didn't quite get to their old levels until late in the match. I went 3 stars. And I actually reviewed one of their matches from this time period. It's December in L.A. It's actually on the old message board, which we're going to talk about in a few minutes. And I remember liking that one a bit better. So it's kind of cool that they paired him up here late in the year to give him something to do and kind of throw back the clock. But this was fun to watch. I just wish it got cooking just a little bit sooner. Andy?
Yeah. I really like this match. It was like I haven't seen a match like this in a very long time. Like this kind of match wouldn't fly today. This is very, it was long, methodical, you know. I was wondering why Tito was wearing the Strike Force tights, and I was like, did they break up by now? And I just Googled it while you were talking. And yeah, Martel was out at the time, I guess. He had injured and he had to take care of his wife. So I was just curious. That's when I said earlier that when you talk about Roma wearing Young Stallion tights, I was like, why was Tito wearing Strike Force? But they hadn't broken up yet. No, they just weren't teaming. But yeah, I love Tito slowing it down to Valentine's pace. I didn't mind the rest holds here. You know, when you have two guys that know how to do rest holds and make it part of the story, it works. When in the early on, when we see Poffo and Horowitz doing rest holds, it's like, I don't want to see this. Just get this squash or whatever it is over with. But these guys with Valentine that hold, thing where it takes Valentine a half an hour to get warmed up. Right. You know, it's true here. You know, great work in the body by body parts by the hammer. You know, I love he's got some of my favorite elbow drops of any wrestler ever. And also his fall, like him and Flair are like the best, like, you know, they just like get smacked and boom, like fall like a tree. Good old school match. Yeah. And another note, like I went 3 stars also, but you know, was Tito ever a heel?
No.
In his career? No. I mean, but he was the great, like, classic, you know, baby face that takes a beating and comes back with a flurry and has the crowd behind him. Yeah, I mean, I was glad this match was on this the show that you guys got me on, because it was something, it was a throwback and made me remember why I really started loving wrestling back then.
Yeah, I gave this 3 stars as well. Incidentally, a little trivia, guys. Not since the beginning, I should say, because they wrestled before that. This is the 7th time that Greg Valentine and Tito Santana have wrestled at Madison Square Garden. 7. Their first one was August 25th, 1984. Then again on October 22nd, 1984. Then exactly 4 years to the day, November 26th, 1984. And then, JR, we've watched 3 of them. Our very first show, January 21st, 1985. Then, of course, their legendary ladder lumberjack match they had 2 weeks before WrestleMania on March 17th, 1985. And then they were in a tag almost 3 years to the day, November 25th, 1985. Of course, at that point, the Hammer was with your man, the Brutai, as the Dream Team. They were tag team champions. And Tito's partner was Pedro Morales. So this is the 7th time in the history of this building that Greg Valentine and Tito Santana have faced each other. Having said that, this match is considerably different than those. Hammer clearly is getting up there in years. He's not as he's a little stockier. He's not as mobile or limber as he was probably in 84 and 85. However, he's still a great wrestler, and Tito knows him. You know, they know each other very well, chemistry top line. And a fun match. Hammer much more methodical. I mean, Hammer was always a slow worker to begin with, but in this instance, he is particularly slower and more methodical in this case. Tito's great, sells it well. And I actually like the ending because they almost threw a red herring and almost made it as if Tito lost by count out. So they did a pretty cool thing there, kind of doing a swerve there, and it ended up being a draw. Now, JR, we usually laugh at how bad they are with draws, like how, you know, obviously it's supposed to be a 20-minute draw. They weren't even close. Andy, what do you think the official match time was?
I'm going to go 17 minutes.
17 even. JR?
18:10.
Very close. 18:13.
Wow.
They were off by a minute 47.
Yeah, that's not too bad.
I mean, we've had worse. We haven't had worse. I mean, it's pretty bad, though. We've had, like, some that are, like, 35 seconds, 20 seconds, a minute over. But, I mean, almost 2 minutes short. Yeah, nobody was paying attention. Any event, the match was good. But, again, I feel like I need to say that Hammer is definitely, you know, doesn't have the he doesn't seem to be as mobile as he was in his earlier matches with Hammer in 84 and 85. Mm-hmm. Having said that, though, I gave it 3 stars as well. Fantastic match for the evening. And I feel like for the audience, they just kind of did – I almost feel like maybe they knew that this was 4 years to the day and they wanted to give like a special match. Maybe. Because neither of these guys were doing anything with each other at the moment.
Yeah, well, so, like I said, they kind of go the loop a little bit.
Yeah.
Because I know they definitely have that one in L.A. It was on 24/7. That's where I saw it.
Mm-hmm.
Let's see if they fight. Well, no, because he was kind of doing the stuff. He does stuff with Garvin, too, a lot late in the year.
We haven't even talked about him yet. I don't even know.
Yeah,
him
yeah no, they do fight a bunch, Valentine and Tito. They do in December and November. So.
Well, okay. From what I can remember back then with house shows, you always had that one good work rate match every house show. Maybe that was what they were kind of doing. Like, you know, we have all these squashes planned. We have these story, the, you know, storyline progressions. Let's have these guys go out and just, you know, put on a little bit of a wrestling clinic, you know, and do something. And I loved Valentine's hair also. I love the classic 80s mullet going. He was rocking it.
It looks like that one was December 17th in LA. It was a 20-minute draw as well.
Okay.
So if you track that down, I recommend it. All right, let's get to our next match, another title match, and that is the women's title on the line. It's Rock and Robin, our champion, takes on Sensational Sherry, rematch from last December. MSG, these two fought. Sherry's looking for revenge. Robin has some funky Western music as she gets run out. As she runs out, gets greeted by all the apathetic fans who don't give a shit. Sherry decks her before she gets in the ring and lays in some vicious strikes on the champ. Sherry chokes away and stomps, eventually leveling Robin with a dropkick. Sherry keeps the pressure on, going for pin covers and working the wrists and arm. Sherry cranks a chin lock as Al says she's lost 10 pounds of late. Robin dodges the dropkick, but Sherry then blocks a roll-up and gets back to work on the neck. Robin blocks a slam and a cradle for two, but eats a tight boot from Sherry. Billy wonders how much punishment the woman can take as they have different builds from men, and Al says they can take more pound for pound. Robin battles back and things spill outside. Back in, Sherry regains control, but both are struggling. Al says Robin has shapely legs, but that's also because she's wearing down, but also is getting worn down and getting fatigued. Robin slugs away and then gets a sunset flip off the middle rope while Sherry's arguing with the ref. The crowd boos that finisher a bit. They did not like Robin at all, and Robin is not fucking good. Sherry worked her ass off to carry it or something decent. The heat segment was pretty much a whole match, and Sherry looked fine, but Robin is just worthless. We'll talk more about her in the months to come. Really not much going on here. Sherry carries it a bit, but Robin, again, worthless champion. I went star and a half, all due to Sherry, Scott.
I gave this a half star, but like you. But I got to say, though, this was not as bad as she would eventually be. If this is the best we get of her, then so be it. But I thought that that Robin really like laid in her punches. She probably Sherry probably said, you know, let's rest, work a little snug. And I thought she really laid into Sherry at times with some pretty stiff punches and kicks. Your match time 8:25, which isn't bad, about as solid as you'll get. I don't think they really deserve to go any more than that. But I do feel that that Robin really laid in this match. She really put a big effort. As much as she could, I guess. Yeah, probably 80% of this is Sherry being that good. No, Robin is no great shakes. I get that. But this is not her worst effort. I thought she was actually pretty solid here, for what it's worth. But it's evident that the belt is an afterthought right now.
Mm-hmm.
Nobody cares. So,
oh, it's definitely on life support for sure.
I mean, we've talked about it for a few years. I thought maybe, you know, after, I mean, obviously the belt was brought, was highlighted earlier in the decade for the point of Rock and Wrestling and Cindy and Wendy and all that. But now it's just become nothing more than a trinket that kind of gets passed around and nobody's really paying attention. So that's what it is. Robin is not good, but I thought this was not as bad, Andy, as some of her future efforts would be. Yes, I'm sure Sherry is a big part of that, but believe me, we've seen Sherry and Robin matches that are worse than this. So I gave it a half star, but if we did quarters, I might have given it 1.25. I couldn't give it 2 by any stretch.
No,
but it might be slightly better than a star and a half, but that's what I gave it.
Yeah, I went star and a half also. I mean, you know, I hadn't seen a Sherry match in so long, and you know, I honestly don't remember much of her. Her wrestling, you know, I forgot how good she was actually in the ring. You know, I just remember her, you know, being, the manager you know, of Sean and Randy. And then, yeah, this was, you know, Robin, no, she missed way too many moves as for a champion. You know, she really didn't do much in the match. I mean, you know, this was all Sherry. And, you know, how thin was the women's division at this time? Was it just them two? I mean, who else was there, really?
But, yeah, yeah, pretty much. I don't know who else is even around, if anyone. I think it's a stand.
Most of them all left.
Yeah.
So,
well, Judy Martin's still around because we'll see her pop up. But it's pretty much Robin and Sherry, Judy. It looks like the three of them work the circuit here through the back end of 88.
Yeah. So it was what it was. You know, the death slot, whatever they want to call it. So I mean, it was. Yeah. Yeah, it was fine for what it was. I mean, you know, the champ got out of there with the win, but yeah, it was not great. But
Sherry and Robin have been fighting pretty much. I'm going all the way back to July, July through November. They pretty much just fight each other all around the country. March even, they're fighting back in March with Sherry as champion. Pretty much the whole year, that's all they did was fight each other with Judy Martin mixed in here and there. That's insane. I'm all the way back in January, and they're still going.
Insanely bad.
Yeah. I mean, their first match was on January 1st, 88. Their last match, December 31st, 88. fuck. God bless, I knew we sat through those. All right, the Fiend comes out. He runs down next month's card in advance of our final match of the night, our main event. That is Hulk Hogan taking on the Big Boss Man. Of course, Boss Man had beaten down Hogan on the Brother Love Show. And a really big match for Boss Man and Slick as they march out to Booze. Huge elevation point for Boss Man after months of build in the lower card. We get a few minutes of silence before Hogan finally emerges and power walks out. And Rod goes crazy with all sorts of hype. Hogan unloads at the bell, shoves his shirt in Boss Man's mouth, and then knocks him to the floor. Hogan follows out and hammers away, but Slick jumps on his back. Hogan walks up the steps and flips Slick into the ring off his back. Boss Man gets back in, clubs away at Hogan, focusing on the lower back. Hulk dodges a charge and tries for a slam, but his back gives out, and Boss Man falls on him for two. Boss Man gets to work on the lower back with headbutts and strikes. As Rod says, Boss Man wants to put Hulk in a cemetery. It's a bit rough. Boss Man slams Hulk hard, but misses a splash, allowing Hogan to fire up and a load of right hands on both Boss Man and Slick. Hulk battles Boss Man with elbows and clotheslines until Slick trips up Hulk. Hulk slides out and gets his hands on Slick, but Boss Man makes a save and kicks away the lower back again. Boss Man clamps on a bear hug, keeps it wrenched in tight for a few minutes until Hogan punches free and rattles Boss Man with a flurry. Boss Man ducks the clothesline, hits a hard side slam to cut him back down, and Hogan is out cold as Boss Man struts around and talks shit. Boss Man goes up top as Billy says he's way too far away, and that's the truth because Boss Man collapses to the mat as Hogan rolls away. Hogan pulls himself up and punches away and hits a big boot and victoriously slugs some more, spiking Boss Man's head into the mat over and over. Slick hands Boss Man some cuffs. He jabs him to Hogan's face. As Boss Man tries to cuff Hogan, Hogan does the old switcheroo. He cuffs Boss Man's hand to the rope instead and then clotheslines him over the top in a good spot, leading to a count-out win and a huge pop. Hogan messes with Slick until Boss Man breaks the cuffs and makes the save. Hogan then poses. The announcers gush. This is really fun. Good pacing and heat. And there's some real sluggish spots in there, but overall it's filled with some good stuff. Nice chemistry with these guys. And Slick was good on the floor, too. Real active the whole time. You can tell he's taking this main event spot pretty seriously. Hogan still has that magic, and Boss Man should be a good villain for him. It's a nice feud to line up, and a good one to keep Hogan busy for a bit. So I went 3 stars on this one. I thought Boss Man has looked great since his debut. They've done a real nice job elevating him. And he keeps it hot here, and obviously him and Hogan just getting going as a program. So good thing to keep Hogan busy while he's not champ. Nice way to elevate Boss Man. Good way to close out the show. Andy.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, I thought it was a lot of fun. I think, you know, going back to leading up to this match, I remember the beatdown he gave him on the Bro Love Show. That was probably like the first real beatdown of Hogan. Mm-hmm. That I remember seeing. I mean, you know, when Andre did the whole thing, it was more about Andre just like, you know, ripping the t-shirt or ripping the chain off his neck. I mean, there's only one
probably
other
Bundy.
Real...
Bundy would be the only other one right before this.
Yeah, and then there's one later,
right?
Also with a certain natural disaster. But yeah, I mean, I was like, Boston was really huge, you know, in terms of girth at the time. And I'm looking at, he's like a baby face, and I googled it. He was only 25. At the time, and I was like, I remember, I thought, you know, as, you know, being 16, you always think everybody's so much older than you, but Yeah, I mean, the crowd, you know, went bonkers when Hogan came out. And, you know, Hogan always used a lot of heel moves, but it was okay with the eye gouges and the back scratches. You know, if anybody else used it, they got booed out of the building, but not the mighty Hogan. But, you know, and I always loved the spots when Hogan fought a big man and it took him, you know, a few attempts to knock the guy off his feet, which they did that to almost perfection in this match. I thought Boss Man had a horrible top rope splash attempt. He just totally, like, it was just landed awkwardly, just didn't go. But, you know, I thought the finish was really creative with the whole switcheroo, and I gave it 3 stars. I thought it was a really fun match to close the night out.
Yeah, I gave it 3 stars as well. Your final time is 10:57. Good to see Hogan at the end of the year. He seems to always come for like the last one or two shows of the year. He's kind of like the holiday gift for the New York fans. Boss Man is definitely, and you said 25, Andy, but he does not act like a guy who's that young. I mean, you're talking about a guy who feels like a seasoned heel veteran. And I was very impressed. I mean, I've been impressed with Boss Man since he got to that point, and since he he's been working at this level. He didn't have to deal with many heel squashes of jobbers. They immediately elevated him, and he looked great at Survivor Series, and he looks good here. I think the only reason they had Hogan win was to kind of send the crowd home happy,
mm-hmm.
If you know, for a holiday show. Otherwise, I probably would have had Boss Man win by DQ or not DQ, win by count out, or maybe have Akeem come out and work the beat down in a normal situation. But for here, I'm all right with it. He got outsmarted. It's not a big deal. Hogan's the veteran, so it doesn't come off as bad.
And Hogan's also, I mean, you know, at this point, he's still pretty much the best in the world, right? I mean, so it's not like an embarrassment to have Hogan beat you. And Boss Man losing by count out, you know, he's not getting pinned. He's not some, you know, whatever. He's still being kept strong. And don't forget too, this isn't like, it's not, he's just fighting him on the show. And this is the first time, I mean, he beat the shit out of him on TV. So he's gotten his heat already. So I'm okay with the outcome here. And yeah, I'm all right with how they finished here.
Yeah. I mean, like I said, it doesn't hurt anything here. And, I thought all I'm saying is maybe in another time, maybe they'd have had Boss Man sneak out a count out win, but this is fine. He got outsmarted. He didn't get pinned. Not the end of the world. And again, and we bring this up a lot, and I always kind of rein myself in when I go this far with this kind of logic. It is a local show. The rest of the country doesn't see it, mm-hmm. So it's not that big a deal in the global scheme of things. Creatively, just a fun finish for the crowd.
Yeah,
and that's fine with me. That's a good way to end the show.
I was like half expecting Akeem to come run in because I'm trying to, as like, you know, my memory's starting to jog a little bit about like what was going on at the time and, you know, what the Saturday Night's main events were and leading into all those big shows. But yeah, I was happy with the finish. And mm-hmm. I gotta tell you, at the time, the Boss Man Slam was one of my favorite finishers. So much so that him and Savage were my tag team of choice in the WWF Superstars arcade game.
Oh, me too.
I don't know if he, because Savage had the running clothesline, and then you had the Boss Man Slam. That was like, my favorite team to use in that game. Too bad they never came out with a home version.
No, they didn't. No, I was kind of bummed about that too. But we are not over yet, though, JR.
No, we're not. We have a little flurry of interviews to close us out. Must have had a fill time. So here we go.
So
Mooney talks to Sherry and they recap Robin defeating her for the title. Sherry says she's the rightful champion and issues a bunch of threats. This is actually a final interview, so good fire from Sherry, who's really kind of a low-key MVP tonight. I'm not going to make her my MVP, but she's in the contention. Like, I thought she carried that match and was good here. Mooney then talks to Robin, who mumbles through some nonsense about realizing a dream, and she is really an odd choice for a torchbearer of the division. I mean, I don't really get it, what they see in her as being the champion and the prime, besides just coming from a wrestling family, I guess. I don't know. I really don't know what it is that they get out of her. So whatever. Mooney then talks to Boss Man and Slick. They don't care what it takes, but they're on record as demanding a rematch. Slick gives Hogan credit as he's the only person to semi-resist the onslaught, but Boss Man's persistence will overcome. Good fire promo from Boss Man, who's really establishing himself as a star here as we close out the year. And finally, Mooney talks to Hogan and does his usual fired up promo, and then we close out with Rod, Billy, and Al. All right, let's get to our awards before we get heading home here tonight. Match of the night to open things up. I had a couple all around the 3-star range, but I thought the best of the bunch was Hogan Boss Man for me. Andy?
I went Valentine Santana.
All right, Scott?
They're both very close, but because I want to give this guy a lot of credit for where he's at right now, I'm going to go with Hogan and Boss Man too, because Boss Man really has impressed me for being this young and being you know, the thrust this much into the spotlight.
Yeah, I had both those at 3 stars, so I went Hogan Boss Man again, yeah, because it's a little bit bigger. All right, the Cousin Junior, the worst match of the night. I went with it hurt me. I had Sherry Robin pegged, but ended up exceeding. So I went with Akeem versus Special Delivery Jones. It was really just a squash, not much going on. And Jones was obviously should be done at this point. What'd you have there, Scott?
I got to go with Nikolai and Sharp. I mean, I know it wasn't probably a match that was meant to happen, but it was a fucking disaster. It sucked on so many levels. Again, whether they were supposed to or not, and they kind of fucked their way through it, regardless, it was a disaster, Andy.
Yeah, it was a shit show. I went Volkov Sharp also.
All right. I'm the only one picking my boy Akeem. That's sad. all right.
You want your boy Akeem to be picked in the shittiest match?
I know, right? It's sad.
Just give him some love somehow.
All right. My MVP of the night. Again, I want to give Sherry a shout out. I didn't pick her, but I thought she was really good in her two roles tonight. But I went with Hogan. He was just on fire in that main event. He looked real good. He helped walk Boston through. Boston, of course, carried his end of the load as well. But Hogan, to me, stood out as the biggest star of this night. Andy.
Yeah, I went Hogan. Just the fact that, you know, they waited and had Boss Man in the ring and then just let the crowd start to simmer, and then boom, Real American hits and the place just friggin' explodes. So yeah, I went Hogan.
Yeah, I went Hogan too. He owned the night. No Savage, no Warrior. The Golden Boy was here and yeah, he lit the night up. Hogan definitely.
All right, the Sandy Beach Award for our least worst wrestler of the night. I went Rocket Robin here, and to me, it's not even close. She is fucking brutal. Scott?
Yeah, I even though Nikolai and Sharp was the worst match, I can't say either of them are nearly as bad as she is. Like I said, she wasn't horrible, as bad as she will be when we see her in the future.
Oh, she's
but
so
she's
bad.
Still she's the pits, though. I mean, she has no idea what the fuck she's doing. We all know who she's – I don't know. We've probably talked about it. We all know who she's related to, which is probably really the only reason she got this job.
I guess.
Andy, yeah. She has – I mean, she has no fucking clue. She has no clue.
Yeah. I'm – as much as I don't want to hate on him, I went Nikolai. I just
wow.
thought he was
okay.
– I just thought he was bad. I mean, the Robin was like – I know what it was. It was more – I don't know. I just was more focused on Sherry in that match, I guess, how – good she was than how bad Robin was, but yeah, she wasn't great. But yeah, Nikolai, I just was watching it just going, what is happening here?
All right, best moment, I went with Hogan cuffing Boss Man and clotheslining him over the top rope. I thought that was the best spot of the night. It brought that main event to a close. The crowd was going crazy. That was my favorite moment.
I gotta go with actually the Powers of Pain's beatdown on Roma. I thought that,
yeah, that was a good one.
I thought it was needed for them. Put them over, and kind of pushed ahead the match for later in the night and what we would get for the next for the next several months. So I go with the Powers of Pain beating the shit out of Roma and messing up his hair, Andy.
Yeah, so did I. I just thought that was awesome. And then like Jay and I were gushing earlier about that suplex into the spear off the top rope. That was just a sick move. So yeah, I went the Powers of Pain beatdown.
All right. Let's go with the Morocco Award for the most juiced of the night. I went with Hercules here, Andy.
Yeah, I definitely Herc. You know, Roma was a close-ish second. But yeah, I definitely went Herc.
Oh, I definitely think no one was more juiced than Akeem. Oh, wait, that was just his charisma. I'm going to go with Hercules too, but I mean, Roma really looks like he took a huge Zahorian cocktail. He looks like he's wound tighter than a top. But I'm going to go with Herc here because he always looks like jacked to the gills.
All right. And the Patera Award for the worst hair, Scott, what do you got?
Oh, it's got to be Lanny Poffo. What the fuck was that Darth Vader helmet head? That was atrocious. And honestly, nobody's hair. I mean, even Rockin' Robin, the rest of her sucked, but at least her hair was halfway decent.
Yeah.
But
Hercules' hair wasn't much better, by the way.
No, I think he was better with the long perm. But Lanny's hair was just, I mean, that looked like some grandma, soccer aunt's hair or whatever. This is fucking terrible, Andy.
Yeah, I hadn't seen that many mullets since probably a Billy Ray Cyrus concert. But yeah, it was, I'm going to go Poffo also. It was just, yeah, it was like he took it off at night and probably put it on like a styrofoam head. But yeah,
it was bad.
I think Iron Mike and Horowitz were second in my opinion, but yeah, it's Lanny.
All right. Finally, overall grade of the night. I went 5.5. This is a middle of the road, enjoyable show. There's some good stuff. There's some shaky stuff. Nothing outright really stunk, but nothing really cracked that 3-star range. For me to go a little bit higher, you need that 3.5-4-star match. I thought 5.5 down the middle, enjoyable show. But again, not one I'm like, oh, this is one of the best we've watched. It was just kind of there. What'd you have, Scott?
I'll give this 5.5 too. It had a little bit of good and a little bit of bad. Love the main event. Love the Tito Valentine match. Everything else was fine. Rockin' Robin. I know I feel like I'm giving her too much credit, but I'm going to give her at least the benefit of the doubt that she gave a good effort here. I feel like she dogged the other shit matches. At least this one was halfway decent. But that Nikolai match was trash. The opener was trash. So there was a little bit of trash and a little bit of treasure. So I'll go down the middle. And Hogan, anytime Hogan's on the show, you get a half point tick anyway. So I'll give it 5.5 too. Andy?
Yeah, I went 5.5. Because there was some good, there was some bad, and some in the middle. So it wasn't, didn't knock my socks off, but didn't, I wasn't unhappy for watching the show. I thought it was a, it was a nice trip back in time for me. So I enjoyed the show.
All right. Our first clean sweep grade since our April Science Man event here in 88. Me, you, and Peter Scott all out of 5.
Oh. Okay.
So there you go. All right. So as we wrap up, we'll get to our usual plugs in a minute. I just want to do talk about our – yes, it is not 2012. But the message board, Scott.
yes.
As we look to really continue to build out our community and what we want it to be, we thought we have talked about and now enacted kind of bringing our message board back to life, bigelow34.proboards.com. Many of you may have accounts that have been dormant, but I will say this. It's been up and running for about a week and a half now, and I want to thank everyone that's already kind of dove back in and set up accounts and gotten started talking again. And kind of what we envision is like social media will be a kind of our quick hit in the moment stuff. And the message board is something we're going to leverage more for like in-depth threads and discussion and posting some of our reviews and stuff we're going to talk about. So, we're moving all our reviews from PlayStation.com over there as well. We'll be cross-posting some stuff. So if you haven't signed up and you want to be part of our deeper discussion, as well as a few other things. So we're going to be bringing back the rest of our 80s music tournament. It got derailed for a couple of reasons, but we're going to actually bring it back there. We had some spamming issues and other stuff going on the site. So with the board, there's more control over who can vote. So if you were interested in that at all, we're going to bring that back on the message board soon. It's also going to be home for our next project that's kicking off. Really, kind of already informally, unofficially kicked off. And that's going to be The Year That Was, is what it's called. And we're starting with the year 1996. Now, if you're a member of Pro Wrestling Only community or you've been involved with them in the past, they've done kind of the yearbook projects where they have a committee that assembled footage and a watch list for a particular year, and they would all watch it and then talk about it. So what we're going to do is we're going to start the year 1996, and right now at the message board, there is a thread where you can go in and nominate stuff we should watch, both really good and then the doldrum end, the bad end. And we have a whole bunch of categories there that after we finish the year, we're going to go in and kind of give awards, best month, best wrestler, and all the stuff for the year. And the idea is to watch chronologically on your own time or as part of a group. And as you watch each thing on the list is to go into the thread that corresponds with it on the board and talk about it. So Aaron George has kind of spearheaded the conversation. He's already started some threads for early January. We're going to focus mainly on North America, which is going to be heavy WWF, WCW, ECW, as well as some lingering territory stuff. And then Chad Campbell is going to help with kind of the top foreign stuff. So Mexico, Japan. We're not going to go too deep there. We're just going to really touch like the top end of that stuff. So if you sounded, if that sounds interesting to you, and I think it'll be a lot of fun, the conversation and digging into a really fun year in wrestling in 96. Tons goes on, of course. So join us there. The process is just getting started. The threads are all there on the message board. That's going to be the exclusive home, the discussion, and the output. And also we'll continue some of the GWE tag team stuff there. You can get your ballots in. That's going on. And plenty of other stuff at the message board, our pick'ems and everything else. So really we're trying to make that our community home once again. So if you got a minute, hop in there. Take part of the polls and the discussion. So just wanted to give a short plug to that. And I'm going to take a breath. Andy, why don't you talk about what you got coming up or what's recently dropped that you want to plug?
Thanks, Justin. Yeah, I just created my my account over there because I wasn't part of the boards before. But yeah, I look forward to joining. It sounds like a lot of fun. I'm very psyched the 80s tournament is finally coming back. A lot of people have put a lot of work into that, so it's good to see it through its fruition. But for me, you know, I mostly live on the Pop feed. Actually came up with an idea today. I'm going to have a Pop Blast coming later this week because of a couple of things that are dropping. Something dropped tonight and something's dropping Wednesday that we're going to do a little reaction on. Right now, I have one person on there with me. I'm trying to get another one. But, you know, look for that later in the week, probably Thursday or Friday on the Pop feed. Also, the next episode of Looking Forward, Looking Back will be in a couple of weeks. I have Jenny Smith, Steve Willey, Nick Duke, and Greg Phillips lined up for that. We're basically going to take a look at, like, one thing we're looking forward to in movies, music, pop culture, sports in 2019, and conversely, one thing to look back in 2018. And then after that, we have Great Debate 2 will be dropping probably mid-January, and then Year in Pop, which 1973, which, Scott, you are my co-host on there, and I really appreciate you coming on board. We have the doctor, and we have Mr. DeMatteo as our little crew to start off with. And, you know, got a lot of positive feedback since we dropped the show last week. And, you know, look forward to having more fun. And, you know, we'll be doing Pod Blast. We also have another Pod Blast coming in, I want to say, early to mid-January, kind of a look back in 2018 as well. You know, you'll know the subject when we start getting closer to. But, yeah, I'm loving being part of the whole Pop feed and Place of Nation family. So thank you, everybody, for you know, listening and being on my shows.
Yep. So to hear all the stuff Andy just talked about, if you're interested, it is the Place of Nation Pop feed on iTunes. You can subscribe and get all those shows. Plus, you get all of the comics output, Marvel Age, Marvel Age Masterclass, Hard Traveling Fanboys. You get Talkin' Pop with Jenny and Tim, Freak Out Drive-In. So tons of stuff, Geek and Sassy, of course, NBA team, This Week in the NFL. Tons of content on the Place of Nation Pop feed. Subscribe to that on iTunes, as well as Place of Nation Wrestling, of course. If you're listening to this, you probably already have. So, Scott, what do you got going on?
We had to hold off a main event for a week, scheduling issues. We will be back with the main event this week. Not sure what we'll talk about. We got a lot of different topics, but we have a very special main event that'll be coming up later this month. A Place to Be Nation alumni will be returning for an episode of main event
Derek
as we
LaRue.
Get close to exactly. We're gonna and he will be as we're getting close to the first big show, wrestling show of 2019, of course, Wrestle Kingdom, a little hint there. So that'll be coming up in the coming weeks, but we will be dropping a main event this week as well. So again, apologies, we didn't have one last week, but scheduling issues did not allow us to, but we will have one coming up this week. So stay tuned for that.
All right. Also, last Monday, Aaron George and I pretty much baked our GWE tag team list. We got a little bit of reshuffling, but we came up with our 100 in pretty much the general order that I think that we're going to have. So check that out. Him and I will be reverting back to our old no holds barred formatics, some say, in the coming weeks. So check that out. Wrestling Warzone should be back soon. Hopefully Chad and I are trying to find a common ground to get to the night after Survivor Series 95, which is obviously a big one. So him and I will be diving into a lot of 96 soon as well. So 96 is going to be a big year here on the PlayStation Wrestling.
Yes.
The 23rd anniversary. 33rd.
Yeah. Can I do one quick plug? One more plug real quick?
Yeah, go ahead.
Yeah, sure. So Great Debate, one of the shows. I have a Facebook page for that, and almost daily I'm putting up a poll, and people have been voting. It's been a lot of fun. Right now it's all about Christmas. So tomorrow, I don't know if you guys – I'll give you guys a little sneak peek. Tomorrow is going to be a couple of Christmas movies going against each other. So it's going to be Home Alone versus National Lampoon's Christmas Vacation.
Oof, that's a tough one.
Yeah. That is a tough one.
Yeah, I'm not making them easy for everybody, trust me, except for, you know, your Italian guys, you know, picking fake trees today over real Christmas trees. Nothing like that smell. But anyway, yeah, check out the Great Debate Facebook page. And thank you for everybody who's participating in all the polls.
All right. Very good. Also, just want to mention with the big return of Jeff Learns Wrestling this past week as well. Thank you for everyone who reached out as we were trying to kind of, you know, resettle where we are. And hopefully, and also thank you for all the great feedback that we received on that show. It was a good one. First 30 minutes, the first 30 minutes were an interesting deep dive into Jeff's recent forays. So if you're interested in hearing about his Plan B weekend, be sure to check that out. It was a good chat. I thought we were pretty deep, and then we dug into the summer of 89. So hopefully we'll be back soon. We'll be looking at the end of 89, so our series and into 90. So we'll be back at some point. I don't know when. It's like just one of those shows that comes in when you're least expecting it and vanishes for another 6 months. But we'll be there. It's our prestige show. You know, I can't run into the ground. But I'm like this one, which will be back in 2 weeks' time. We'll be looking at the same day, like you mentioned, Scott, the Science Man event from this very day in 1988 with Peter Winson. And then that will actually be our final Vintage Vault of 2018. Because, of course, the week of Christmas, usually Christmas Eve, we'll look to drop the Christmas special. We'll be recording that over the couple weeks coming. So be sure to check that out. And then before you know it, it'll be 2019. So for Andy, for Scott, I'm Justin. We're out. Thanks for joining us. We'll talk to you in 2 weeks' time. Goodbye.
He'll have a big fat pack upon his back. And lots of goodies for you and for me. So leave a peppermint stick for old Saint Nick hanging on the Christmas tree. It's the holiday season, so a hoop-dee-doo and dickery-dock. Don't forget to hang up your sock, 'cause just exactly at 12 o'clock he'll be coming down the chimney down. He'll have a big fat pack upon his back, and lots of goodies for you and for me. So leave a peppermint stick for old Saint Nick hanging on a Christmas tree. It's the holiday season, so a hoop-dee-doo and dickery-dock. Don't forget to hang up your sock, 'cause just exactly at 12 o'clock he'll be coming down the chimney, coming down the chimney, coming down the chimney down. Happy holiday, happy holiday, while the merry bells keep ringing. Happy holiday to you.